Welcome to the Leader's Edge podcast. I'm Sandy Laycox, Editor-in-Chief of Leader's Edge. In this episode in our AXA XL podcast series, I talk with Jonica Smith, President of Global Excess Casualty for AXA XL. We drill down into several of the pressures on this market, including ongoing claims litigation and nuclear verdicts, geopolitical tensions, climate change and renewables, as well as how to remain relevant for clients dealing with these pressures. This is a great addition to our AXA XL podcast series. Give it a listen. Jonica, it is great to have you here with me this afternoon. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Sandy. Great to be here. Nice to meet you.
I am very excited for this conversation today. We're going to talk about global excess casualty, where you are the head of that for AXA XL. It's a very dynamic marketplace, as I'm sure you know, and you'll be telling us about. So let's just jump right in. You and your team recently met with the brokerage community in the US and Bermuda to discuss the global pressures facing the market. And I'd love to dig in a little bit further into what you learned in those conversations.
Great, love to.
So one of the pressures that you all came out of these conversations with was the claims litigation trends in the US. We've definitely all been talking about social inflation, the size of nuclear verdicts, and the increasing number. So I'd love to hear, you know, your feedback on this and how this trend is really affecting insurers and policyholders.
Thanks for that intro, Sandy, and for the question. Yes, nuclear verdicts. We spent like 2.5 days with our brokers. We brought some of our claims people in and some of our casualty risk consulting people in to talk about some of the technical nature. But we talked about nuclear verdicts, and we even talked about thermonuclear verdicts. So, you know, and for your listeners, nuclear verdicts are awards over $10 million. And now we're starting to hear of thermonuclear awards, which are awards over $100 million. And unfortunately, we're starting to see a frequency of thermonuclear verdicts. But just touching on nuclear verdicts, we, you know, from the period really from dating back to 2012, we started to see the increase in awards. And then the impact of social inflation, which really emerged from the period 2015 to 19, but I think if you're talking to any claims professionals, they'll feel that it was all already there. We were seeing a steady increase in both the size of the awards and the frequency of the awards. You know, of course, during COVID, we saw a lull as the courts closed. But again, once the courts reopened and reverted to the pre-COVID volumes and played catch up, we've clearly seen an increase in, again, the size of the awards and the frequency of the awards. And just to some of the statistics that we were able to share with the audience when we met with them recently, you know, in 2020, so in our COVID years, I think there were 35 corporate nuclear awards. And this has doubled in 2022 to 70, right? And then I won't bore you completely with statistics, but just to share with them, because I think they're important, right?
You love statistics.
Yeah. The median corporate nuclear award in 2015 was $41 million. And by 2019, it had risen to $57.2 million. Mm-hmm. One last statistic. The total sum of corporate nuclear awards quadrupled from 2020 to 2022 to $18.3 billion, right? So back to your question, how has this impacted insurers? How has this impacted insureds? You know, I would say it's impacted insurers really straight away, right? It impacts us in how we select risks. We think about those industries that are going to be more prone to nuclear awards. So if you think about, I think we're all reading about commercial auto, right? Or, you know, heavy fleet trucking exposure, right? Very, very prone to nuclear awards. So we can't run away from risk, but what we can do is we can manage our price. We can manage the limit we deploy. And as these awards continue to escalate without any sign of tort reform, I think we become very judicious about the amount of limit that we deploy, because ultimately, you know, we're putting out a limit today. The incident might happen sometime in the next 12 months if there is an incident. Maybe, touch wood, there is no incident. But the claim might not be settled for 3 or 4 years. So how do we price for this claim inflation? the social inflation. And actually, one of the key topics that came, and I heard this first at an event that Aon hosted earlier this year, was we've got to start changing the language, right? We've got to respond to the plaintiff bar, who are very have got these really well developed tactics about getting and working the jury and getting these awards. And you know, the insurance industry or the defense counsel, you know, we face antitrust, anti-competitive issue. There is real no collusion around it, but there should be some common strategies that we employ as an industry to address this. So I heard it first at Aon, and we're starting using it now, and we're talking about, we're really not referring to it as social inflation. We're talking about the legal system abuse. And it's trying to turn that table to try and inform our clients, inform jury pool that this is an abuse of the system. And if you let it run unchecked, it's not good for society. In fact, I think it becomes a tax on business and it becomes a tax on consumer. So big challenge for insurers. I think how we manage it are our true limits. Huge challenge for consumers, right? How much limit do they buy? Is it enough limit? Are they exposed to these events? If this event happens, what's their protection? Or if we're into a thermonuclear award, or is this now, and they don't buy enough policy limit, is this a revenue event for them, or is it a balance sheet event for them? And these numbers are quite frightening then. And I think it should be, you know, I'm sure the brokers are discussing it with them. Should they take more risk at the lower end of a tower, which can be a bit of dollar swapping, and use that savings and to buy more protection against the nuclear awards? And that will be driven industry by industry. Those people that, as I touched on, that can be prone to it. And then one final item of how we're thinking about it is we're trying to change the engagement with our customers and our clients through our broker partners, you know, creating a relationship between our claims personnel who are dealing with claims every single day, who are dealing with the legal system every single day, and these plaintiffs, and who are developing strategies of how to hopefully mitigate it. So we're meeting with our clients, understanding their philosophy, understanding their motivation around their brand reputation, educating them on the legal system and the risks, educating them on our expertise to try and help them that in the event of a bad day, that they should be partnering with us and looking to us to help them navigate it. Because if they engage with their insurer partners and the councils that we work with early, we're very confident that it will generate a better outcome than if they try to deal with this under the threat of a plaintiff bar. And we're really trying to avoid the plaintiff bar separating us from our customers, so that the customers worried that if the insurer doesn't pay, they're going to come after my business. But you know, we want them to feel that we're on the same side fighting against a legal system abuse that we need to fix for everyone.
That's, you know, it's a really complicated issue, and that's kind of the first time I've heard of the wedge driven between the policyholder and the insurer by the plaintiff's bar. So that's a new twist to this conversation that I hadn't heard before.
It's very real, Sandy. And I think what we've seen become more and more prominent is the very first question after an incident is the plaintiff lawyer asks, how much limit is your insurance tower? And the second question is, here's our demand. If you don't surrender your insurance tower, we're coming after you. We're going to go for more than that. And that's the wedge. That there is the wedge. The customer, we don't have many customers who have multiple claims, but faced with a very significant event, that can be a scary moment for them. So we need to have the ability to influence it so that we don't have a panicked customer screaming at us to surrender our policy limits, or the business that they're spending time building up is at risk.
Did you have any discussion on the third party litigation funders and the rise of that? I know in the US it's been increasing along with the number of cases that make it to court.
Yeah, I mean the third party funding was a big topic. I wish I could go back into more statistics, but I'll save you from that. I mean, we see We see it as a significant industry. We question the ethics of it, right? We are starting to, again, as part of the tactic that the defense bar is starting to use, it's trying to have that known. If the insurance tower is known, we're trying to get in front of the judge and the jury that there's a third party funding element here, that there is some third party that is actually going to make money out of this. What we don't know is by pushing that strategy, does it impact the jury in a way to say, well, we still want to compensate the victim, and now they're telling us that 50% is going to this third party, we're going to increase this compensation more, right? We've got to play that out. But I think the whole third party funding issue, I think it started in Australia. I think it came up during the conference that this is happening before it moved into the US. But it's a growing phenomenon. There are billions and billions of dollars being invested in third party litigation funding.
All right. So another big pressure point that you all found was geopolitical uncertainty, which is not a surprise in general in terms of the global risk landscape. But I'd love to hear what areas in particular came up on the radar and why.
Yeah, sure. We had actually at this conference, and again, it's part of our thought leadership, right? It's trying to get beyond from just selling insurance, but to try and bring the package about how we navigate risk. We kicked off the conference with a presentation by our head of political risk, and it really set the tone for the 2 days where he sort of described what was happening on a macro basis. And it was a little bit scary, right? We're all aware of the conflicts that are happening throughout the world, or the threatened escalation of conflicts. I did ask him to try and finish on an optimistic note. He really didn't, right? There's so much happening and so much to be concerned about. But if he was going to be positive, he just said, you know, if you think back to when conflicts escalated, it usually involved a period of a real economic downturn. So we felt that's the positive that we have, that the economies, broadly speaking, are healthy. And that usually avoids countries making more conservative decisions. So let's hope that stays the same. But clearly we've got conflicts happening throughout the world. And as an insurer, we monitor those as an event unfolds. We try to work out, have we got exposures there? What it means for us? Should we continue to have exposures there? Can we limit our exposures there? Clearly, we have terms and conditions about declared wars or known wars. I think that the type of conflicts that are emerging right now, sometimes you don't know if it's in a war, if it's a terrorism event, if it's a state-backed action. It's murky and it's gray, and that's challenging. But as we become aware of them, we certainly limit our exposure to them, pull our exposure back from those areas. But even if you think about geopolitical, one of the, again, back to statistics, I think he said in the year 2024, over 50% of the population of the world will vote, right? So if you think about that in the context, and I think Indonesia had just voted and they're a huge population, so that is a big skew. But over the potential for change in 2024, just from a voting democracy is massive. And if that voting swings right wing or left wing, there are situations. And I think closer to home, you know, he talked about North America and, you know, the political temperature that we're all facing in North America in a likely an emotional political year, where I think it's seen that you know, the propensity for violence, as we saw previously, is probably at an all-time high. So as an insurer, we think about that as close to home. So, you know, as you think about large gatherings of people, large concentrations of people, be it concerts, sporting events, large hotels, large metropolitan areas, that definitely factors into how we deploy our capacity, how we think about it, the sort of risks that we think that their exposure is elevated in this environment. And then we have the knock-on effect, if I take it away just from, you know, violent type scenarios, but we see impacts on supply chain. We clearly saw that in Ukraine. we see the need to bring in other products? What are the quality of the products? Do we suddenly get a products into the supply chain that are lesser quality, are lesser efficacy, and have other impacts? So I think we do a lot of work around that, thinking about where the product is coming from, what quality is involved. And if we think about even the last couple of weeks, the impact of the Baltimore bridge collapse, right? The obvious, clearly we've got a significant, I think we're talking about in the publications, they're talking about possibly the largest marine loss of all time. But we're still dealing with cargo. We're dealing with the interruption and the shipping lanes. I believe they're moving now. But you know, there's ships and cargo that haven't been able to move. So the quantum of that is really, really significant. And probably, and I don't know, I'm an excess casualty guy. I don't think much about ports, but it's probably something we should think a lot about. We rely a lot on ports just for our everyday life, and the impact, be it the cost, the insurance cost, is significant, or the, you know, the piracy that we've seen out in some of the straits over towards in Europe and beyond. So I think it enhances the potential loss that we can face through a liability policy, through a marine policy, through a cargo policy, and then through the products exposure that it brings as well. So yeah, we talked a lot about the broad aspects of the geopolitical landscape.
Yeah, there's really a lot to say there, and especially top of mind is that shipping accident that we just saw in Baltimore, and it is being talked about as potentially the costliest ever. Although it sounds like there's not a lot of fear that the marine market won't be able to absorb it. But in looking at the different ways that it's going to affect, you know, business interruption and supply chain and all of those things, it's really a magnifying.
Yeah, and you know, and I feel remiss now. I didn't mention the tragic loss of life that also exists. But you know, and I think we've all seen the video and how easily that was a huge ship, right? But how easily that bridge collapsed. It probably gives a lot of concern about infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure, and then we have an earthquake in New York. Who knew? And it's only the first week in April, right?
Right. We haven't had hurricane season yet.
So I think the potential for some catastrophic events, and I think both of those events could have been a whole lot more catastrophic than they turned out to be. Obviously, the ability to get that bridge closed probably undoubtedly saved further loss of life. But New York probably's got a lot of checking of buildings and infrastructure and tunnels and bridges following the events of last week.
And surely I would imagine that New York hasn't done the kind of earthquake resilient building that places like California have had in place for longer. I mean, I don't know. I haven't looked into that, but
I expect not. Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to another difficult, challenging topic. I mentioned hurricane season, but climate is another pressure point, and particularly transitioning to renewable energy, which, you know, I don't know if everyone realizes, puts other pressure, right? Other risk, new risk into the marketplace. So let's talk about that a little bit and the specific risks that are pressuring the market from the climate and renewables perspective.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we had a great discussion around climate, and I think it's very top of most companies' agenda, right? Everybody's aware of it. We're reading about it. I think it was against the backdrop, you know, we all know that the Earth's climate has changed throughout history, but I think it's very hard to ignore the science now, that the scientists are saying that this current warming is happening at a rate that we haven't seen in thousands of years, right? And I think they're also holding out that a lot of this warming is driven by human activity. It isn't a natural phenomenon. It's a human activity. Temperatures are rising, oceans are warming, sea levels are increasing, ice sheets are shrinking. And I think, you know, we're seeing an increase in the severity of hurricanes, of typhoons, of wildfire. Arguably, the wildfire is a lot of that is to do with man-made phenomena, right? It's distribution lines, it's picnics, it's you know, combined obviously with the winds and the dryness and the drought conditions of certain areas. But again, we saw it in Hawaii last year with those that the tragic Maui fires. So I think the impact of climate is challenging and remains challenging. It's delivering losses to us that I think we all expected. California wildfire losses, I think that was a known phenomenon. Hawaii, you could argue a few things went wrong, but we probably would have viewed that previously as a low wildfire risk location. But I think as the climate has changed, we're seeing the ability for wildfires to develop nearly everywhere, right? I mean, we saw the Canadian fires last week. We've seen the fires in Texas most recently. And it is a phenomenon that's causing a lot of challenge. But then against this backdrop, you know, we've got the pressure. If this is, you know, as we try to move away from a carbon-based economy and transition to renewables, the pressure point for insurers is, well, a lot of this is newer technology. So, you know, insurance is a great business of looking backwards and working at the experience of stuff that we know to project what's going to happen in the future. But the renewable technology is new. It's untested. We're unsure what's going to happen in 12 months or in 3 years or in 5 years. But I think what here at XL, I think we've been very proud at partnering with clients who are transitioning on their journey to net zero, right? So what does that mean? It's trying to find clients, and that's across a broad array of portfolio, right? Everything produces carbon, but how do we help them both from an educational perspective, both from a partner perspective, help them on their journey to get to that net zero? And that, and some of that is education. It is, you know, I think I mentioned some of the resources we had at the meeting. We have a bunch of casualty risk consultants, all engineers, right? So they've got great expertise, like be it in the risks associated with the solar farm or with the wind farm. And it's trying to help our underwriters understand the technology. We had a great session on lithium-ion batteries and the risks associated with lithium-ion batteries. And the fun fact I got from today was, you know, clearly these batteries are prone to fire. You submerge them in water, they continue to burn, right? So the challenge is, and I think we're seeing that on our highways right now, right? And some of the new the EV cars, if they burn, I think the fire service let them burn out as long as they're not going to endanger surrounding property. So I think it's bringing a lot of pressure points. I think it's an inevitable journey that we are on to support the transition to net zero or to more renewables. But it brings risks, associated risks that we don't fully know about. The people who are buying their insurance, how much insurance do they need to buy? If you've got a solar farm out in the middle of the desert, what's the risk? Probably doesn't sound that much, right? But if you've got a wind farm off the coast and dealing with coastal elements or pollutants, I mean, I think they're all things that we've got to understand and really take the time to understand the technical aspects of it and try and come up with informed decisions.
Yeah, it is a lot of new, interesting risk. We had been looking at the grid recently and its ability to handle the change in, you know, power sources and the upgrades that, you know, will surely need to be done there is a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
And I did also read, just to go back to the Baltimore Bridge, that there was a container of lithium ion batteries on that ship. So think about the potential for the risk that could have happened. And even though it's horrible and tragic, there could have been more things that had gone on.
The boat could have sunk. And then I think you would have a huge channel issue, right? If I wasn't aware that the batteries were on, but it doesn't surprise me, right? And if they had caught fire, a structure had caused that to happen, and they had taken the ship down, I think we would have been looking at a much more tragic event, or deadly event, expensive yeah. event.
All right. So we've just talked about a lot of really challenging challenges that the insurers are facing, as well as brokers and policyholders, of course. But I'd love to hear from you. You know, you're in excess casualty, which you're seeing a lot of the really hard risk to place. How is the market responding in terms of innovation in products? Are you seeing new, different ways of, you know, packaging risks together that addresses some of these issues?
I think that's a good question. It's probably the $1 million question. As we look, we're at a market that's been writing excess casualty in the Americas since 1986. So we've got tons of data, tons of experience. We've worked through many market cycles. The good part, and we have the scars to show for those cycles, but we're still here offering the product in a way that we think supports our customers. I think the approach that we're taking is more a partnership approach to our clients. I think within our organization, you'll hear words like we're trying to help our clients navigate, right? And navigate, if you think about a navigator, is, you know, out going out to sea in rough waters, you find a way. It might not be the direct route. So we might not be selling you an insurance product, but we can help you with your overall view, estimation, and cost of risk, and how to handle that best, or how to mitigate it as best you can. So we're clearly, I think, engaging in a more partnership, collegiate way with our customers and with our brokers, trying to help that, as opposed to just here's a policy of insurance, sell it, stick that promise in your top drawer until you have the bad day, and then claims are going to deliver the product that our underwriter promised you. I think we have developed from that on the backdrop of the legal system abuse of the huge awards that we saw 15 to 19, and we are continuing to see. I think we saw a pulling away from the market by insurers, and they pulled away by the limits that they offered and the terms and conditions that they had. And probably one of the bigger takeaways are the challenges for the industry that we heard that loud and clear from a panel of brokers that we had, was what's our relevance? How do we continue to be relevant for our clients? Our clients face the challenge in excess casualty, where the rates increased 3 or 4 years straight and continue to be increasing. They face the same issue on their property portfolios. They face the same issues on the cyber. Every year there appears to be something that's needs fixing, right? So I think, and I think the industry has rightly been challenged as well about, as soon as we see an emerging issue, we slap an exclusion on it and we run away from the risk. And I think the challenge for us and for the industry broader is to solve for some of those risks. It's to develop solutions for our customers, for the industry generally, that were, if you think about the beginning of insurance, it's really, you know, it's to try and allow businesses, people evolve and take risk to evolve, either to evolve a product, to test the new technology, ultimately to make the world a better place. And I think that's the approach we're trying to take. It isn't always about selling them the insurance policy. Of course, we want to sell them our insurance policies, and we want to partner with them. And we have clients that were clients with us in 1986 that are still clients with us today. So we think we're doing something right. But relevancy is a big issue. And in the pace of change that we're seeing around technology, and the breadth of change, and the breadth of exposures that our underwriters today have to think about on a global scale, it's really, really hard, right? It isn't a simple process. So we can't just turn it into a commodity that you buy off the shelf. We're trying to bespoke our product relative to our clients, trying to understand their risks deeper so that we can help them make decisions around their risks, and we'll be partners to them through their journey.
These are really a lot of challenging risks that we've talked about. It's a complicated global world, and it seems like you all are thinking about it from the ways that you need to, looking at the complexity and looking at various solutions and not just, you know, thinking about it as you have for decades. So obviously there's more to come, but it's been great sitting here and talking through these marketplace challenges with you. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Sandy. My pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
That was Donica Smith, President of Global Excess Casualty for AXA XL. You can find more conversations with AXA XL and other industry experts at leadersedge.com.